So I want to take this skippily and welcome again to another episode of Latin in Layman's, where I'm going to go into some grammarian type stuff. I've been doing a lot of etymology via my TikTok. If you want to go hit me up on over there on TikTok, I believe it's just at Mr. Connerly or at Mr. Liam Connerly. Either one. Remember, there are a few other ones that my students have made that are kind of like, they're not claiming to be me, but there's one that's like Mr. Connerly's son or Mr. Connerly Jr. Those are not me. And you'll see once you go to those pages. But I just want to put that out in the air because I don't want people thinking that students are taking my identity. They aren't. It's all good. We talked about that. I told them as long as they're not claiming to be me or whatever, it's all good. Okay. Regardless of, go check me out. You'll see me, all my etymologizing of words and such. But for today, what I want to do is I kind of want to shift gears a bit because next week we're going to be introducing, second and third conjugation verbs, first, second, and third conjugation to some kiddos, first and second to my fifth graders and third to my sixth. So what I want to talk about here is very important rules for us to remember because third conjugation, is a it's not fun, it's not as straightforward as first and second conjugation, just like as third declension is not nearly as straightforward as first or second. So if you're interested, or if you're just interested in showing me some love and support, I was talking on my TikTok yesterday about how I just keep on seeing my Apple Podcast ratings remain at 10. So if we can get that number up, I would be ever so grateful. I'm just looking at 10 ratings, you know, and I am grateful for those 10 ratings, for those that have stuck their necks out there and, you know, done something nerdy and left a review for a podcast that delves into Latin language and etymology and Greek and all that stuff. For those that actually appreciate that stuff, I appreciate you. And if you just want to show me some love because maybe you're a friend of mine or you're a student that just is like, you know what, I want to help out Mr. Connerly in my and help the algorithm out in his favor, then you know what, I would be ever so appreciative in that respect as well. I'm starting to do this more often where I'm touting my other platforms and kind of urging you guys to rate, because the more I hear about it, the more, you know, the algorithm just is ever in your favor whenever you have more traffic coming that way and or ratings and all that good stuff. So if you guys can help that traffic come this way, then we can eventually reach that critical mass to where we're going to create this rhetoric revolution. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's still that in that revolution that airy basis right now. We're kind of all culminating. We're coming up with ideas. We're trying to figure out how we can make this a movement where we can appreciate language, because seldom is language ever really appreciated like it should be and like it once was. I was reading Ludwig Wittgenstein, if you guys have ever heard of him, but he's actually the person that I think really helped me think critically about language and how language envelops everything around us. It just encapsulates our world and delineates all of the medical, metaphysical things to physical things and so on. It helps us delineate things that we have no idea on how to describe otherwise. Like I said in the past, you guys, how many times in your life have you felt frustrated when you're trying to explain something to someone, but you just don't have the verbiage, the words, the verba, in order to, you know, explain it? Think about a baby, for instance. A baby probably feels this on the reg, right? Because all they can do is cry. But man, I feel for them because they're just frustrated. They want to tell mom and dad, you know, I pooped my pants, or I'm hungry, or I'm teething, or whatever. AKA dentition. Dens dentis, coming from the Latin, which means teeth, and then that ition, the placement of, and that is what dentition is, the development of teeth. If you didn't know, now you know. Regardless of, let's get into third conjugation stuff, and I'll stop ramble-bambling in my little intro section here. But before we begin, let's remember two important rules. One is that the thematic vowel in third conjugation is a short vowel, so it appears as I or you in the present and E in the imperfect. And secondly, the tense sign for the future in third conjugation is E. The future tense is third conjugation, uses no thematic vowel, which is a little bit of a, I'm not sure. I like having patterns. I like having ways in which I can kind of delineate on how I can or have steps in order to know how to conjugate correctly every single time with the correct form, right? If you think about it, the way that I tell my students, in order to decline a noun, you go to the noun, you find that genitive singular ending, because we always refer to that nominative singular most of the time as being very irregular. So we got to refer to the genitive singular as our basis. We find that genitive singular ending, we wipe that bad boy off, and that gives us the base of the noun. And then you can just do the base, all the way through all 10 cases, both singular and plural, or 5 cases, both singular and plural, making 10 endings. And that's how you would, for instance, decline something like lex legis, which means law. Like, if you think about it, this is a third declension noun. Lex is very different from legis. Lex is the nominative singular, very irregular, if I might say so myself. But legis, well, if I go to my genitive singular ending, I know the genitive singular, triangulate that position on the third declension chart, and I have an IS ending. So I have legis, L-E-G-I-S. I just wipe away that IS and I have leg. So then I go leg, all the way from nominative down to ablative in the singular. And then I do the same thing in the plural. And if I decline it in full, it would be lex, legis, legi, legem, lege, leges, legum, legibus, leges, legibus. See how you take the leg and then you put the ending on, and then that creates the whole word. Talking about how I always say parts of the whole. It actually reminds me of genitive, you know, a partitive genitive. A partitive genitive refers to the parts of a whole, because you have a roof, you have walls, you have a door that all comprise what? The parts to make the whole of a house or a car or something like that, regardless of, let's do this. Let's do this, Shia LaBeouf. Just do it. Third declension has the most number of irregularities of the four conjugations in Latin. Yay. Here is an example of a third conjugation verb, scribo, which means to write, like a to scribble. That's where we get the word. It's also where we get scribe from. It's where we get subscription, actually. Sub means underscription, comes from that scribo, which means to write. So it's underneath a writing, essentially. So I'm not sure if that really correlates with when you were subscribed to your YouTube channels and whatnot, but seldom do I find words that are, you know, are very intuitive. I mean, some of them are very intuitive, like kinetic energy, kinetikos, to move, energy, work within. Kinetic energy is just energy that is moving, to move, moving energy. Regardless, I'm going on such tangents because I had a really great day with my students doing cultural stuff. So I'm in that science mode, and I love showing the kids all of these huge terminologies, you know, things like hyponatremia, for instance, hypoglycemia, and then showing them that they are bits and pieces. They are parts that make the whole. And those parts, actually, although we refer to hypoglycemia as an English word, it is made up of Latin and Greek affix and prefix and suffixes. So if you think about it, the English that you're speaking is actually just a trench coat where they shoved in a bunch of Latin and Greek inside there. All right. So if you think about it real quickly, if you think about an example, just before I continue on, because I love talking about this kind of stuff, hypoglycemia, hypo, low, oh, but that's Greek, low, well, low. Glyceme is an affix that refers to glycis, which later turned into glucose. What is glucose, y'all? If you know, you know. If you don't, it's just sugar. That's where we also get fructose, which is fruit sugar, lactose, which is milk sugar. So if you're lactose intolerant, you are intolerant to those milk sugars in the digestive process, you know. So with that being said, you know, you've got sugar and then emia. Emia in the medical field, suffix, refers to a presence in the blood. So if you do A plus B plus C, hypoglycemia is English. But then if I break it down critically and understand its bare roots, it just means low sugar presence in the blood, which is exactly what hypoglycemia means, right? In fact, If I look up hypoglycemia, it literally, according to Almighty Google, means the deficiency of glucose in the bloodstream. Okay. I've just memorized that at this point because I love to both show the Almighty Google definition because, face it, you guys, whenever we don't know something, we defer to Google to help us out. It's just the nature of our world nowadays. So if you didn't know, now you know. Scribo, scribis, scribit, scribimus, scribiti, scribunt. That is the first, or that's the third conjugation verb scribo conjugated in all of its forms in the present. Okay, scribo is it, imus, itis, unt. Notice that the formation of the present tense in third conjugation follows a similar pattern to that seen in the first and second conjugation, rather. Take a third conjugation verb base, add a thematic vowel, which will be fairly irregular in this conjugation, and to that, append personal endings. So note, though, the personal endings are the same as those in the first and second conjugation. But unlike the A, which dominates the first conjugation, or the strong E, which dominates second conjugation, third uses a short vowel, which readily changes form as it encounters different consonants. Here are some things to consider and think about. So like we see, it will appear as I in the second person and third person singular and the first and second person plural. Let me get a little swiggy swig here. In the third person plural, it appears as you. And the first person singular, and rather in the third person singular, there is no thematic vowel. The same way the A in the first conjugation disappears in forms like laudo or amo. I don't say laudoa or amoa. My students know this. That just means I praise laudo. That's where we get summa cum laude. Laude is the vocative form. The translation of third conjugation verbs differs in no way from verbs in first and second conjugation, which is nice. So there's no point in rehearsing what we already know. Scribo, for instance, would translate as I write, I am writing, I do write. You know, we have present progressive, you know, different forms of the present, but I don't bog people down with those kinds of terms. We just refer to present in different ways, right? You can, in the present, I am writing, I will write. That's future. That's silly. I do write, though. That's happening in the present. And I write. The other persons and numbers will follow suit within the same paradigm. But if we shift into the imperfect, as for the imperfect in the third conjugation, it poses even fewer problems than the present. And I love that. Just like in the first and second conjugation, it uses ba. I love ba because ba is very, very straightforward for me. I don't know why. It's just how my mind has worked because it just goes ba, ba, spot, ba, spot, spot. It uses ba as the marker for the imperfect. So thus, if I took the imperfect of scribo, it would go scribe bomb. Note that unlike in the present, the thematic vowel in the imperfect is e. The imperfect tense in third conjugation translates the same way it does in the first and second. It denotes an incomplete or repeated action in the past, and therefore scribe bomb translates as I was writing, I used to write, which is a form that I really don't like, and then I kept on writing, which is also another one that I don't really like. I just typically stick with I was writing because remember, imperfect past is action that happened in the past that is incomplete still. So it's not perfect past, it hasn't been completed yet, it's imperfect. But future, however, unlike bo bis bit, bimus, bitus, bunt, business, you are used to from the first and second conjugation. Third conjugation uses E as its future tense marker. This E, which is easily confused with the second conjugation thematic vowel, which will present, oh my gosh, I got my words mixed up because I just got a message on my phone. Sorry. Backtrack. So unlike that bo, bis, bit, bimus, business, you are used to from first and second conjugation, third conjugation uses E as its future tense marker. That's what I wanted to say. Sorry about that. So that E that I just referenced, which is easily confused with the second conjugation thematic vowel, will present some challenges and it only goes to demonstrate how important it is to distinguish between second and third conjugation, because if you don't, you can start doing some flubbity dubs while you're translating, and I don't want anybody to do that, especially my students, because I am so proud of all of the rockin' awesome grades that I got to grade this past week. My students are awesome. They are, yeah, they're amazing kids. They're amazing. So to make matters only worse, though, not in regards to my students, but in regards to the future, the E isn't used universally. In the first person singular, the future tense marker is an A, rendering a conjugation that looks like get ready. This is a little weird. So it's gonna look similar to the imperfect for a second, in which case it will sound like scree bomb, but it's not scree bay bomb. It's just scree bomb, A-M. Scree bomb, I will write. Scree bays, you will write. Scree bet, he will write, and so on. And even worse yet, note that this tense marker eats up the thematic vowel. So there's no thematic vowel at all in the third conjugation future. But a thematic vowel returns in the imperative mood, of which I don't really go into all that much. But let's talk about it. The imperative singular in third conjugation uses E. So, for instance, the imperative singular of scribo is scribe, with a short E, meaning write. Right, scribe. But just to be perverse, as far as I can tell, the plural uses I plus TE. So the ending you would expect from first and second conjugation is just like the third conjugation, which will render scribite. I don't know, frick. Which means y'all write. But according to the new school that I teach at, apparently y'all is not grammatically correct, and I challenge that to the nth degree. But you know what? It's just because they don't want people writing in contractions. But we can look and understand that you all is the expanded form of y'all, which is the contracted form, okay? I hate it when people take themselves too seriously within the classical realm, because that's why we're not reaching more of a greater audience. If you guys would get off of your contrived, conceited horses, we would reach a greater audience. Thank you very much. If I hear any, or if any classicists are listening to this right now, please hear my plight, because people don't want you to tell them that y'all is grammatically incorrect. I'll tell people that ain't is grammatically incorrect, because it is. Even though it's in the dictionary, I will beg to differ. But y'all is much more of a grammatically correct statement. And if you're going to nix little kids from having the joy of saying in the second person plural, y'all right, and make them say you all, it's the same thing as saying you guys, except for you guys in this day and age would probably be considered heteronormative. So we don't want to do that. Y'all. Just let the kids be kids. Jesus criminy. And as far as it weren't enough, there are these four irregular verbs to get into for the third conjugation that I want to just wrap up with after my little side tangent there yet again, because I'm sick of, you know, that's why I loved being at USU. And I, you know, shout out to Dr. Damon and Dr. T, Dr. Titchener, and all of my colleagues back there, because you guys approached Latin in a way where we understood that, you know what? It's an amazing thing. It's so beautiful, but we've approached it in such a rigid manner, just like how certain science people approach science in a rigid manner and stuff like that, that we're not able to reach a greater audience to help people appreciate it more, okay? So at the end of the day, listen, just understand, why do people call this a dead language? Why are they continually asking us why we study a dead language? Well, respectfully, yes, it is objectively, but no, it's not. It's ever-changing and evolving, and we can use Latin as that basis, that root to bridge off. But why are we getting bogged down by stupid nuances like that? Or getting bogged down in stupid grammatical terms and not understanding the beauty of language in general. Yes, you should understand what, you know, a subject, direct, object, blah, 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 skip it a bop. But at the end of the day, you guys, get off your horses and reach people where they're at, okay? Reach them where they're at. Those four irregular imperative singular forms, or those verbs that are going to have imperative singular words that are irregular, is going to be deco, duco, ferro, and facio. Deco, to speak, duco, to lead, ferro, to carry, facio, to make. I believe, I don't have the translations in front of me for those, but I know ferro because when you transfer, you carry across, transmitting across, fair coming from ferro, which means to carry. So those four imperative forms with which said one after the another would sound kind of like a nursery rhyme, like Dick, Duke, Fock, Fair, gently down the stream. Finally, in comparison with all that, though, the infinitive will look like an old friend. It's very nice. It uses an ending ere as in scrivere, which means to write. Remember, we just put that to in front of in order to make it infinitive. So with that being said, and hopefully I didn't veer you off track with all of my tangents and such, but you know what? I love language. I love education, and I love reading a greater audience, but we can't reach a greater audience if we don't meet them where they are at as well. And it's all about understanding each other. It's all about understanding our worlds and where we're at and where we come from. But if you can understand that Latin is not just this dead language, it's so, so much greater than that, then let's go into it. Let's dive headfirst, slowly, but also methodically and deliberately and pragmatically and logically. And with no dogma, we go into this understanding that language is this beautiful tree, this web that just overarches in so many ways. So thanks again for hearing me do my spielity spiels. And I hope you all have a wonderful 3-day weekend. Tempus est discedere.